You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
This is Cold War Conversations. If you're new here, you've come to the right place to listen to first-hand Cold War history accounts. Do make sure you follow us in your podcast app or join our emailing list at coldwarconversations.com.
Welcome to episode 24 of Cold War Conversations. In today's episode, we're talking about the Cold War nuclear monitoring system in West Germany. Today's guest is Mirko Krumm, who contacted me via our Facebook page. He manages the preservation of a warning bunker in West Germany. Before we start, I would again like to thank all those who are supporting the podcast with monthly pledges via Patreon. It is much appreciated and will allow us to expand the scope of the podcast. If you would like to support the podcast further and get access to some exclusive extras, go to our website at coldwarconversations.com and use the Patreon link on our homepage. Or for one-off donations via PayPal, just go to paypal.me/coldwarconversations. Back to today's episode, and a warm welcome to Mirko Krumm. So today on Cold War Conversations, we have Mirko Krumm, who contacted me through our Facebook discussion group. And I was intrigued by what he was talking about on Facebook, because he had some knowledge of the West German nuclear warning system and a particular bunker as well. So welcome, Mirko, to Cold War Conversations.
Yeah, hi Ian, I'm glad to be here.
Great. Can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, of course. My name is Mirko Krumm. I'm 28 years old, and I live near Bremen in Western Germany. And I am the founder of the Warnamt 2 Association, the German name. I'll get into the translation later. And I organize the renovation of the bunker, which includes finding appropriate tech we are currently missing and organizing all the members and, yeah, pretty much everything.
Okay. I think you've listened to my episode on the Royal Observer Corps in the UK, and you're obviously familiar with the Royal Observer Corps.
Yeah, I also read a book, The Cold War, by Wayne D. Cockcroft. It's a rather well-known book, which has a section on the Royal Observer Corps too. Yeah, it's very similar, actually.
Yeah. Can you just explain how the West German organization was set up?
Sure. So on the top level, you had the Administration for Civil Defense, which was split into several smaller departments and agencies. For example, the Technisches Hilfswerk, the Agency for Technical Relief, and others. And one of these was the so-called Warning Agency, or Warndienst in German, which consisted of 10 identical bunkers called Warnamt, or Warning Department. And they pretty much had an area of around half a state to organize and to monitor. All these major bunkers, there were 10 of them, I don't know if I mentioned that already, were built to withstand a near miss from a 20-kiloton warhead, and were thought to house up to 200 people for up to 30 days in case of nuclear war.
Okay, so these are command bunkers, these 10 bunkers.
Exactly.
Okay, and how was the individual monitoring done? Because obviously with the Royal Observer Corps in the UK, there were these monitoring posts with teams of three dotted around the country. How was it done in West Germany?
Pretty similar, but they didn't actually place people in those bunkers. They had the most proliferated bunkers, which there were hundreds of, just contained a small weather station and a radiation measuring probe. And it was connected to the warning departments by telephone. So right. Anytime some of the radiation levels were increasing, they could get the readings by telephone. There were also manned stations in bigger cities, which you could, I guess, call warning post. They were mainly included in already built civil defense bunkers, so they didn't get like extra bunkers or anything. Mm-hmm. But they could also measure radiation, measure other NBC threats, look at the skies and tell you if there's some enemy airplanes dropping bombs or whatever, because, of course, conventional warfare also had to be taken into account. And they produced a local forecast for fallout, for example, mm-hmm. and sent that to the higher up warning department.
Okay. And these smaller unmanned bunkers, do they still exist? Are they preserved in any way?
The bunkers mostly not, but the tech is still in place and it's still operated by the German Bureau for Nuclear Safety, I guess you could call it.
Okay,
so it's mainly used in for civil purposes to monitor like any radiation leaks on power plants.
Okay, so the technology is still out there and working and deployed.
Yeah, I think there's around 1,800 of these probes still in Germany, and they're still active, and you can still look them up actually from the internet if you visit the page of the Bureau I just mentioned.
And how was the telephone lines protected from electromagnetic pulse?
The telephone lines between the posts and the main bunkers?
Yeah.
I think there were dedicated lines that ran deep underground.
Right.
Probably in specially protected cables, but I don't have details on that.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine. I'm just interested because, you know, one of the strange things I found talking about the Royal Observer Corps is there was no protection on the phone lines. So, you know, the communications would have been non-existent, basically, once a bomb had gone off. So the bunker that you preserve, how did you get involved in that? How did that come about?
Well, I for myself, as you can probably note from my birth date, did not in any way get involved with the Cold War. I didn't experience it, but there was always some kind of interest, but no way of really getting deeper into it, I guess, until I got the chance to go out and explore military facilities that were left over from the Cold War, like urban exploring. And I found out that there were pretty many military facilities in my area. So I went deeper into that, and at some point, by accident actually, I ended up in the bunker we're renovating now with a guided tour. We were just there to take pictures, and I started to wonder what we could actually do with it.
Okay, so it was when you first visited the bunker, was it quite derelict at that point? You know, it was not been looked after, or...?
Yeah, it's it was active until 1997. Then the whole warning agency got stripped and removed from service pretty much. And all that was left was divided into other agencies, like the radiation measuring network, for example. And it was, well, used by the school, which is now owning the whole area. It was on, but they didn't really do much besides keeping the lights on, and everything else was shut down.
Right, and what was still left in the interior? Had all the equipment been removed?
Actually, most equipment is still in there, or was still in there, besides the diesel generators, which were sold back in 97, and some of the water main tanks were also sold, I think. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everything that wasn't really necessary and that could be sold was sold by federal departments. And then after the school bought the whole area, they put a few euros back in to keep it going, but not really more than the lights and the water.
Okay. And you say it was designed to hold 200 people, did you say?
Yeah, according to specifications, it was scheduled to hold up to 196 people. But in practice, they rarely got these numbers. Of course, this was only in case of a national emergency or a civil defense situation. Otherwise, there were around a dozen people in the bunker 24/7.
Right. Oh, so there was maintenance in it 24/7 as well.
Yeah, and of course, people listening to the radios, people watching the telex feed and whatever.
Yeah, okay. And, I mean, it sounds very similar to like a regional seat of government that we had in the UK, an RSG. Mm. Was it intended to sort of like manage law and order and that sort of thing in the event of, you know, a nuclear attack or a civil emergency?
Not that I know of. I think the regional authorities would still have managed everything from getting food to the population to maybe evacuating people, etc. Mm-hmm. And the warning agency was only the middleman to get a clear overview over the situation and advise them so they could act accordingly.
Okay, so there would have been another bunker with government officials and...
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's libsynads.com.
It's very different from state to state here. Mm-hmm. Because some state heads actually got their own bunkers with their own staff and organization and all the telecommunication lines necessary already prepared, and other states did nothing pretty much. So I don't even know where they would have gone. Probably sometimes actually bunkers like ours, but it's not true.
Yeah. Okay, so this bunker was around information gathering from the monitoring sites and then providing that to whoever required that information.
Yeah, on one side there were the NBC units, like the unmanned bunkers and the manned bunkers, and of course the main overview was generated in our bunker. And then there was the monitoring of air raids or air attacks.
Yeah.
And that was mainly realized with a direct connection to the nearest command and control reporting centers. Radar bunkers, pretty much.
Okay.
The air surveillance.
So they had a dual role.
They just were in the position to warn civilians about possible air raids.
Right.
And on the other hand, so they got the radar data from the military.
Okay.
And they gave back the NBC data to the military.
Okay.
So even though it wasn't like officially allowed in civil defense terms, they worked together.
Yeah. Because I think one of the differences here, and I could be wrong around the UK experience, is the UK monitoring posts were very much around nuclear weapon detonation and detection.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it sounds like, and obviously, you know, within West Germany, it was going to be the main route for the Red Army should they attack. But there was also a focus on nuclear and biological weapons. So there, was there other detection systems to monitor that?
No, actually not. There were only automated systems for nuclear threats. And yeah, the only way they would have figured out any biological or chemical attacks would have been by sending out people and with like chemical detection equipment and
right
hazard suits.
Okay, and would that have been the role of the Voornamt department, or
not the main role? They pretty much got this role in the 80s and just kept it until the 90s,
right,
where it was pretty much handed over to the firefighters. And before that, it was mainly just for the smaller posts to detect any chemical or biological attacks and not the main warning departments.
Okay. Okay. And so the equipment that was in the bunker was mainly communications equipment to receive data and also to transmit data to other organizations.
Yeah, and everything that has got to do with maps and actually calculating the fallout from nuclear detonations by graphical means, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, lots and lots of telecommunications.
Yeah. And how big is this bunker? I mean, if it's holding 200 people, it sounds quite sizable.
Yeah, I can't really tell you like the exact size in square meters or something, but it should be 1,000 square meters per level, minus the area of the walls, which are 3 meters thick. So that's quite a few square meters gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's about 1,000 square meters in total, like usable space.
Okay, and is it fully underground or is it partially on the surface?
Yeah, it's actually semi-sunken, so the first level sticks out of the ground, but there were like earthen ramparts all around the sides, so it was basically a hill with a big radio tower on top.
Okay, and if somebody was visiting the bunker, what would they see in there?
Almost everything. We have the ventilation system running again, which of course only runs in winter right now because it would be way too expensive to cool or heat the air. Our blast doors are working. They are hydraulically operated. Most of our communication equipment is working, like our main telephone distribution frame and the switchboard. All like 60 volt systems still. Our telex devices, and I think they are called flexo writers in Britain. The ones that write on thin paper strips.
And of course,
everything that's got to do with NBC detection and protection.
And do you find there's a lot of interest in looking around at the bunker and the Cold War?
Potential interest, yeah, definitely. Otherwise, I guess we wouldn't have started it. Yeah, definitely. Most people don't know that this thing exists, and even most people that lived near it during the Cold War didn't know it existed or what it was for. So, yeah, definitely lots of regional interest. And we hope to make that international interest over time, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully this podcast will help you there.
Oh, we will see. The DDR pretty much left their civil defense to the civilians.
Right, so they just had to fend for themselves. I mean, if you'd been in the bunker for real and the alarm had sounded, so that, you know, if imagine you were back in the Cold War and you were in the bunker, the alarm sound. What do you think you would have done in that situation?
Well, since the bunker would have probably been closed a few days before any strikes actually happened. My choices would have been limited, yeah. I guess. And it's also my personal opinion. Like, if you're already in the bunker and this safe of a bunker, especially, I think you can stay and see what happens. And yeah, if you don't like what you see after 30 days, there's always some way out, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not convinced that the 30-day period would be enough to secure living outside. That's very optimistic.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. Why are you interested in the Cold War, you know, and not being born during the Cold War?
For me personally, I think it mainly has to do with the fact that I didn't really learn about anything about it in school, even mm-hmm. though I did my major in history. And we talked over the revolution 1989 and a bit of Stalin before that, but that's pretty much it. Nothing in between that happened was really mentioned in school, and I think that's a pretty huge gap.
Yeah,
especially for people that didn't experience what the GDR was like and don't know how this class divide played out, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised. Is that a common? I mean, is that the way that history is taught in German schools, that they don't really do much about the Cold War and the GDR? I mean, what are the main subjects that are taught in history? In
Probably World War II by far, which is kind of understandable.
Yeah.
Living in Germany with the whole context, but yeah. I think they threw the Cold War under the bus for that pretty much, because it's not too far away. Like, most people can probably still ask their parents or whatever.
Yeah,
and it didn't really get a lot of attention. Until now, as I'm hearing more and more, I think that the Cold War is actually back or has appeared as a topic in schools, and right, they actually write tests about it and so on. So maybe we will grow our role to accommodate students a bit more.
Yeah. Do you get many school visits or educational visits?
Well, we are situated on a school ground, so there's pretty much always students around the bunker, and of course, especially students from the school were already in the bunker, and that's one of our main goals, yeah, getting students into it, just because I think it's very, very important to teach.
Okay. And obviously, you know, since you've been involved in the preservation of the bunker, what is the most surprising thing you think you've learned since you started, working in the bunker?
So many things. I think just getting a grasp of the whole dimensions this conflict or this threat of a conflict, how large it spans, like how many sites were built even in Germany, or especially in Germany, like how many anti-air missile sites there were, and how many airfields and barracks and so on and so forth, and bunkers and command structures. it's pretty amazing to slowly be able to grasp how much they actually did.
Hi, this is Rhonda in Virginia, and I support Cold War Conversations because I think the work that Ian is doing is critically important. I think it's vital to record the firsthand accounts of people who lived and experienced the Cold War, because it illustrates history in a way that a book never can. So thank you so much for the podcast. It's my favorite podcast, and I look forward to it every week.
To be like Rhonda and help to preserve these incredible stories of the Cold War, as a monthly or annual supporter, you'll be able to listen ad-free, you'll become one of our community, get the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster as a thank you, and you'll bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate to find out more.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the most important thing and one of the most astonishing things to finally see how many people wasted their lives pretty much just looking over the border and waiting for an attack.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. You think of the billions spent on all these defenses that in the end were never used but may well have prevented them being used.
I think you had a bit about nukes in there. So I think nuclear weapons, in my opinion, definitely helped prevent World War III.
Mm-hmm.
It's still questionable if they should have ever been built, but I guess that's a bit late to discuss now. And I don't think that they will be gone in the next decade or century. So it's best to learn from the past, I guess. Look at the Cold War and see what lessons we can learn for the future. So it stays like it is now. We didn't blow ourselves up.
Yeah. Yeah. So far, so good.
Yeah.
Where would people find the bunker online? What's the website address for the bunker?
It's www. I guess I can best spell it warnamt.de. Or you just search Facebook or Google pretty much for Bahnamt, and you should be able to find us.
Okay, I'll add that to the show notes page as well, so people can just click through on that and have a look at your site.
Yeah, sure.
What are your opening hours? Are you open every day of the week or just certain times?
Just after reservation right now, but we have open doors on Sunday, the 9th of September. Because of the European Heritage Days.
Right.
So that's a good opportunity if you're already in Germany to visit us, or at any other time, just write an email.
Yeah, okay. And are any others of these bunkers preserved in the same way that you are, or are you the only sort of one that people can visit?
We're the only one that you can officially visit, that's for certain.
Right. Because some of them are still in use, is that?
No, they're all, not all. One is still in federal hands, but it's used as a fugitive camp. Like not the bunker, but the above ground area. And the other eight are all in private hands, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay, I guess they bank very good wine cellars or something like that. You should try me with my German. I'd be all
data centers.
Your English is way better than my German would be. So don't apologize at all.
So it's also predestined for data centers, I think.
Oh, okay.
And that's what two of them are used for.
Yeah, I suppose that constant temperature and
the walls
helps, and the walls. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, no, that's really interesting. I mean, it's strange because until you contacted me, I hadn't thought. Oh, yeah, other countries in NATO must have had a similar organization to the Royal Observer Corps.
Yeah, and there were actually international exercises between these called INTEX or VINTEX, I think. They're both versions, as far as I know. And they worked with warning agencies even from, I think, the Netherlands and Denmark and France, if I remember correctly. So there seems to be some form of warning agency in every one of these countries.
Right. And presumably you've got people in the area who used to work in the bunker? Or not?
Yeah, actually, one of the people that works for the school is one of the technicians for the bunker. So although he's getting pretty old now, he still helps us, helps out as best as he can. So if we have any questions, we can always call him.
Okay. And was it, it was a civil organization rather than a military organization that was running the bunker? Right. Exactly. Okay. Similar to the Royal Observer Corps, which wasn't strictly military, although they did wear military uniforms.
Yeah, they didn't wear any uniforms in our bunkers. It was strictly civilian.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay, well, that was probably all the questions I had on the bunker and the warning system. Is there anything else you'd want to add to that?
I think you have to pretty much see it for yourselves. I mean, I can only compare to all the ROC bunkers with pictures I've seen online so far. But I think it's bigger for the most part. And, well, maybe not more impressive, but equally impressive to the ROC regional bunkers.
Yeah.
And... yeah, you should definitely just come over and get a sense for the scale. Yeah.
You're selling it really well there, Mirko. So that's great. Now, I did have a few other questions which aren't really related to the bunker. So what would be your favorite Cold War themed or Cold War era film?
That's easy. I think it's by Dawn's Early Light. Just because of the all, I think they portrayed the breakout portion of the war best.
Yeah,
and like all the bunkers starting and all the people sitting in their all the bombers starting and all the people sitting in their bunkers and stuff like that. I think that's pretty accurate.
That's the film with the B-52 crew and Rebecca De Mornay and Powers Booth, I think.
Two
of the main actors in there. Yeah, no, good film. And I think it's available on YouTube. So I'll make sure there's a link to that. It's not a brilliant version, but it gives you the idea.
Yeah, it's the other possibility would probably be... getting VHS tape.
yeah, or getting it on a better quality one on DVD. I'm not sure it's on Blu-ray yet, but yeah, no, good choice like that. If you were going to make a film about the Cold War, what music would you have as the soundtrack?
I actually changed my mind on that. I had Masters of War by Bob Dylan written down, but just this... just a few hours ago, I changed my mind to Eve of Destruction by Barry McGuire.
Okay.
Because I think that's pretty much the most literal one.
Yeah.
I could imagine.
that almost sounds like the theme tune of the Vornamps.
This would be an air raid siren, though.
Yeah. It's great. Great choices. I'll put down both of those actually. So if you could invite three personalities from the Cold War period to have a few drinks with and have a chat with them, who would they be?
Oh, you left out the second part. That's
and
good
what questions?
I don't really have an answer.
I was saving that. I want to hear first who you want, who you're going to have.
I would definitely get Kennedy and Khrushchev, I think. Get inside, like how does it feel to like sit on a literal powder keg with a box of matches in your hands?
Yeah,
and definitely Willy Brandt, just like to get a good grasp on the West German perspective.
Good choices there. I've got the opportunity. I don't know whether you saw on the Facebook group, but I've got the opportunity to interview Sergei Khrushchev, who was
I think I saw that.
Yeah, so. I'm looking forward to speaking to him about that. And Willy Brandt's a good choice as well. I'd love to know how he felt when he discovered that his aide was a Stasi agent.
Oh, yeah, that too. Well, that's quite the period in German history, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's a fascinating character as well. I mean, if it hadn't have been for that situation, he probably would have been Chancellor, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. I think so.
Okay. And so what questions would you ask these people? I mean, I think you've...
That's the really, really mind-boggling part about that. I don't really know. I think that would come over the drinks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But no, great choices there. So is there anything else you want to share?
I think we got the basics down. I mean, there has to be some reason to still visit us, right?
Yeah, we don't want to show everything. No, we don't want to give everything away. You're right there. Just give them a little, and then they'll want more.
And also, it's the only way to get in our bunker is with me, because, as I said, our doors are working, and I want to see the person that can handle 2,000 PSI on a door handle.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was really interesting, and I think particularly people in the UK will find interesting the contrast there between the Royal Observer Corps and is it the Van Ampt organization? Is that what
Van Dienst would be the organization?
Van Dienst. There you go. Mm-hmm. You see, that's why I shouldn't have tried speaking German. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much. And I appreciate you taking some time out of your evening. And
you're very welcome.
And I'm sure your girlfriend will now be delighted that you're no longer talking concrete and bunkers with me.
She's reading a book. She's fine.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all we had time for. But if you want more details of the bunker, these can be found in our show notes, which can be reached via coldwarconversations.com. Just click on the episodes and show notes option on the homepage. If you like what you are listening to, then please do join our vibrant Facebook discussion group where there's loads of Cold War information and further discussions with our guests. Just search Cold War Conversations. We're also on Twitter at Cold War Pod. Lastly, do leave reviews with your podcast provider. Thank you very much for listening and supporting the podcast. It is really appreciated. Goodbye.
Not enjoying the ads? Well, you can avoid them by going to coldwarconversations.com/donate. By becoming a monthly or annual supporter, you'll enjoy ad-free listening, become a part of our community, receive the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster, and bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate for more information.